Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode 139 for the week of August 31st, 2011.
My name is Scott Jester.
I am George Alborn.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. We're joined today by a full roundtable of folks.
That's right.
Talking about music. To my left, I have Dan Apchinski from Gamer Melodico. Hey, Dan.
Well done. Thank you. Hey.
I have Kirk Hamilton from Kotaku, formerly of Gamer Melodico.
Hello.
I have George.
I am still here. Yes, indeed.
I have David Carlton of Malvasia Bianca and former guest of the show as well.
Thanks for having me back.
All right.
I should say we're bringing you all together because you all, I think, have like an expertise in music. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experiences maybe with music or music games?
Start with Dan.
Sure. You know, my experience with music games really dates back to, I think, Kirk's Xbox when you first got it. I'm a musician, I play guitar, I sing, and you know, discovering whatever Rock Band and the early Guitar Hero games really showed me a lot about how not only how much fun it can be to play rhythms on, you know, over video games, but also like how much that can teach us about rhythm and is an educational tool.
Because you're a musician as well, right, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I'm education editor for a guitar magazine, so those are topics that hit close to home.
Professional.
Expert. Yeah. How about you, Kirk?
Well, I'm a musician as well. I studied jazz saxophone in college and play a whole ton of instruments now. I just stopped teaching a jazz band at a school here in the city for 7 years, which was really cool. So I've been a musician my whole life. And I kind of was like didn't play Guitar Hero 2 really, or any of the early games. I came back to console gaming in like 2007, which is right before, you know, the first Rock Band came out. And I remember getting that game, and I played guitar and I'd played bass and all these horns, but I'd never played drums. And then I played drums with this game, and it was just the absolute awesomest thing I've ever done. And my roommates and I became obsessed with it. And I got really into this idea of, like, you know, I'd been performing forever with people, like with Dan and I were in a band and still play together a lot. And that's really fun. And, like, you kind of form this friendship with people when you perform with them. And I had never had that with a whole lot of my non-musician friends. And so suddenly, like, my roommates and I, none of whom are musicians, had this band, the Ninth Avenue Sluts. And I was the drummer. And, you know, we had a guitarist and, you know, a singer. And we did the whole thing. And they learned. And we really, it was awesome. It was like I got to share this sort of thrill of performance with people who weren't musicians. And that sold me on it right there. Like, I just was a total, you know, convert for Rock Band, so I got really into it.
In 2007, when everyone else was freaking out about BioShock, you were like,
Rock Band! Yeah. I remember even the announcements for that game, because that was... Did it come out in 2007, is that right, when Rock Band came out?
I don't know about the Rock Band timeline, but it sounds about right.
I think that's right, yeah. Because I remember, like, it might have been 2008, actually, I think, but when people started talking about the game, and everyone was really into it, because Harmonix was making it, obviously, and... not really knowing what to think of it, because I just hadn't, you know, I hadn't made that connection between games and music yet, where I'd played those games. So yeah. The minute I got it, though, it was just, so I've been into those games ever since.
Cool. And David?
So I don't have the professional musical background that these other two do, though I certainly took my share of piano lessons and then harpsichord lessons when I was growing up.
Harpsichord?
Yeah, I grew up in Oberlin, which is a college town, but it has a very good conservatory, mm-hmm. So... There's music all over the place there. And I've been certainly playing one Rock Band game or another literally ever since the first one came out. If you look on the side of my blog, there's like a list of what books I'm reading and what games I'm playing right now. And literally there has been one Rock Band game or another there since I got the first Rock Band. Nice. in 2007.
It's funny because I think everyone else has much more experience with both the games and instruments than either Scott. I don't play an instrument.
No, Kazoo, I mean, I have played instruments as a kid, but I don't think I can read music anymore. So, yeah. But like, I'm definitely lapsed. Yeah.
Well, so one of the reasons...
That's why we had everyone on here.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah. We're certainly not qualified to talk about it. One of the reasons I actually invited everybody at GDC a while back, David and I had a long discussion about sort of the state of the music genre and music games in general. And so I guess I'll talk a little bit about some of the reasons why I think it's an interesting topic now. It feels like not many people are talking about music games anymore, whereas it used to be sort of a big deal. In February, Activision canceled their 2011 release for Guitar Hero, shut down the Guitar Hero whole franchise entirely. That same month, Harmonix downsized. They fired, I think, 15% or so of their employees. That was shortly after Viacom sold Harmonix for something like $50, something tiny.
Yeah.
EA's John Richitello said that buying Harmonix would be like catching a falling knife, which I thought was a really interesting statement. So why don't we start with each of you going around and talking a little bit about what you think the state of the music genre is today, or the sort of potential you think it still has, and why that might be the case, and then we'll go around and then just get into a discussion.
So I don't know about the state of the music genre. I mean, the music genre as a whole, it's kind of imploded, though. I would like to try out Dance Central at some point. I'm very curious about that. But to me, like, the state of the music genre right now means Rock Band 3 Pro Mode. And I think Rock Band 3 Pro Guitar Mode is possibly the most interesting video game that I've ever played.
Ever? Really?
Yeah. I'm not sure about it, but I just as the ways it has me thinking about what I'm doing, uniting sort of the tactics in the game with the physical motions of my hands, the what it teaches me about education. I'm learning how to play guitar, and I'm shocked at how well their approach of dividing things up into these little micro goals that where I can accomplish a new goal every 5 minutes or so and feel like I'm actually doing something. And maybe I'm fooling myself, except that when I look at my guitar playing now, which is bad, versus my guitar playing, you know, 3 months ago, which was non-existent, progress has been made. Progress has been made in a way that it would be hard to measure if you were just listening to it, because it still probably would sound awful to somebody else coming there. But the feedback that the game is giving me is real, and the progress that I'm making is real.
I'll have to come back to the goal and rewards thing later on. I thought that was pretty interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way yet. Dan, someone says music games. What do you think about right now?
You know, really, I think about, so we're in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there are just a ton of, startup culture is a huge thing here, and everyone has their, like, Rock Band room set up in their office, and it seems like most of the Rock Band I've played lately has been in someone's office after hours, you know, on their giant plasma screen TV.
Yeah, I can attest to that. So I've been at a couple startups recently, and I play Rock Band at both of them.
I suppose I think I kind of stopped buying Rock Band games after number two. I mean, at least in that I didn't buy three. That's not exactly true. I had Beatles Rock Band as well, but it's sort of weird. Like it had a huge spot in my. So I'm married. My wife and I, we played the games together, and then, you know, it kind of became a thing that we had just kind of done. We had been through it, and it was no longer a thing that had the same kind of novelty that it had when we first tried it out.
Don't let your wife hear that.
No, I know.
You're just talking about music.
Yeah, that's it.
I hope I didn't make that sound like I was unhappy. I'm not. We just don't play Rock Band anymore.
Kirk? Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've kind of got these different takes on Rock Band, sort of personal and professional. Professionally, it's definitely this sort of, I mean, the just being a Kotaku and whatever, like, you couldn't, there would be no, it would be really hard to come up with a reason to write about the games right now at, like, a kind of major site like that, which is interesting, I think. Like, the, it's the narrative is definitely like these games are over. And you know, David, I agree that I think Rock Band 3 was unfreaking believable. Like, I played every mode of that game, pro drums, pro keys, even that Mustang guitar with the buttons on it, and then the actual, they let me use the Squire for a while that I don't have anymore. And yeah, I mean, I feel like that was the game. When I started writing about Rock Band, right after I became really enamored of it, and wrote about just how I like had this picture, this like utopian future where people were like mixing real instruments and you know, fake plastic instruments, and everyone could play, and it was this huge party, and we would all just like experience music in this different way, and it was super rose, you know, super rose tinted, and it was like kind of ridiculous. But it honestly, like, Rock Band 3 was kind of is kind of that game. I mean, it really is. It's an amazing game, and like across the board, it's like the ultimate Rock Band game. And it kind of sucks that it's out, and the narrative is that these games are dead, and like the market isn't there anymore. Because I mean, Harmonix just made this incredible thing. I mean, the pro mode on, and it's definitely like, it's pretty niche, right? I mean, there's not.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of taken aback to look at the leaderboards for pro guitar, and like, you know, for pro keys, like I'm a competent pianist, so fine. I'm a better pianist than most people playing the game. It's not surprising that I do well. Right now, I was looking yesterday, and I'm something like 590th place on the pro guitar leaderboards. That is not a sign that I am awesome. That is a sign that there's not very many people at all playing the game.
And it's, you know, it's funny because that kind of takes, there's this thing of mastery. There's so much to talk about here, but one thing I've got a thought about here is that there are these different levels of mastery in those games. Like, I love the way that they teach. They kind of take advantage of all those video game ways of teaching that games do, like scaffolding things so well, and kind of, you know, you can't get to one place until you've gotten to the place before it. Like, the tutorials are really great.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like is kind of just navigating the menus. Like, you know, if you could just do it on a computer or something, it would be a little easier. But the way they've built them is really awesome. But it's funny how it teaches really effectively, I think. Like, it teaches you how to play these songs. And I'm like, okay, a guitar, but I can learn how to play, you know, whatever song just by going through the tutorial.
I really like how in one of the additions to Rock Band 3, I believe in the early Rock Bands, you could certainly play through the song slower, and they broke it up into sections for you. So if something was giving you trouble, you could go play it at 60%, 70% speed or something like that. What they did in Rock Band 3, you can still do that, but also for each song, they have they've identified a few sections, maybe between 4 and 10 sections, that these are the key different parts. So like, there's some riff that shows up over and over again, and they'll have you play through that riff a couple of times, and then you play through that, and once you've hit 100% 3 times, the game kind of urges that you move on to the next section. And I thought this was fascinating for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, when you're playing a piece, learning a piece for real, sometimes you play through it straight through, but then you don't, but then you find sort of the tricky bits and focus on those. And so this mode imitates that much more than I used to. And also, one of my piano teachers gave me advice once that if you're working on a tricky bit, then you work on it until you've played through it to your satisfaction 3 times in a row, and then move on. And so I thought it was very amusing that the game itself, if you've gotten the green bar on one of those sections 3 times in a row, moves on. It's you know, just like my teacher was telling me to do.
So one of my housemates was going through on the pro keys, trying to like learn this, right? And I was watching him play the same sort of, you know, you repeat the same segment of a song over and over and over again.
Yep.
First at slow pace, and then move on to the next, and so on and so forth. And he would get really frustrated because he would have a hard time at some points getting past one segment and kind of lose the bigger picture. And it still seems like there's a level of commitment you have to invest to sort of partake in that pro experience. How much of a barrier of entry do you think that still presents for those even interested in trying the sort of pro guitar?
You know, it's interesting. I almost think like the best person who can get into it is someone who is really interested in learning guitar. And I almost don't think that it's even someone who knows how to play guitar really well. My own experience with the whole thing has been like, when I play, and I play guitar quite a bit, I do a lot of like right hand muting of the strings, you know, and the game misinterprets that and says like, oh, you hit a wrong note, you know, right. And I'm like, I'm playing the part, I'm doing it exactly like I would do it if I did it live, but the rules are slightly different. So it's like coming from an experience perspective, it's like there's a barrier on that end as well. Like the best way to get into it might be to be someone who is just like, wow, I really want to learn how to play guitar.
Yeah.
There's something too. I mean, it's funny. There's a difference between the actual instrument that you're playing, like the instrument in your hands, the pro keys, or, you know, the keyboard or the pro drums and the pro guitar, and like the instrument that you're representing on the screen. I think you're kind of talking about that, Dan. There's definitely a lot of like the controller isn't no MIDI guitar is really perfect. Like, and it's basically just that it uses MIDI. And so there's some weird stuff there, and it doesn't quite, you know, if you're muting strings and stuff, it doesn't pick that up. But one thing that I like about the guitar is that it is an instrument, and it makes sound on its own.
What I found, the pro guitar.
The pro guitar, sorry, the Squire, yeah. With the actual strings that you can plug into an amp and play. I had a hard time with the keys, honestly. Like, David, I think you're probably better at piano than I am. I'm like, okay. But learning those parts, I had a lot of trouble because there was no tangible feedback for me.
Yeah.
And it was like, there's this weird thing where, you know, when I've learned a lot of instruments, and like you practice the instruments and you hear your mistakes. And if you're playing along with the recording, you know, you hear where you don't line up with the recording. Where in Rock Band, if you make a mistake, you don't hear the wrong note, you don't hear the clam that you played, you hear nothing. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you just hear that the part isn't there. So it's actually this weird sort of feedback where, at least with guitar and with drums, I mean, you know, you can step away from the game entirely and you can go over the parts yourself, which can be really helpful, I think.
Yeah, so that was something I found frustrating on keys too. There would occasionally be situations where I was doing something wrong and I didn't even quite know what I was doing wrong. Was I just not get the timing right, or mm-hmm. did I miss one of the notes, where I would be able to tell instantly if I'd missed a note if I were playing it live. So there was a GDC talk, really fascinating GDC talk this year. I don't think it's available for free yet, unfortunately, about the pro guitar and all the iteration that they went through. And it's amazing all the different things they tried, because the result is so natural seeming, just like the presentation of the notes on the screen. But they addressed this issue, and I actually asked them about it after the talk too. So their feeling, and I think it's the correct one, is that it's much more important to preserve the illusion that you're actually making music and playing guitar than to give you accurate feedback. So they thought it would be much more important for somebody, you know, starting out in the pro guitar, where, you know, frankly, if you plug it in and do the stuff that you're doing, that the game asks you to do an easy pro guitar, it's not going to sound, even if you do everything perfectly, it's not going to even sound like you're playing that piece. But the game gives you this illusion, and that makes it, their feeling, I think I agree with them, is that it makes it a lot easier for you as a learner to keep on going with it, because what you're doing, you know, it sounds awesome. And so they really went all in on that, to the extent that there's not even a mode where it can show you what you're actually doing, which I certainly wish there was, especially on pro keys. Yeah, I feel the same way. And so what I've done with the guitar is, I've gotten the habit of, if there's a song I'm doing, I'll do it a couple times in game, and then I'll plug it in to an amp and play along with that. And that's an interesting experience, certainly.
Is it possible to split the signal? Is it possible to play it into the thing and split one out to the amp as well?
So for the guitar, absolutely. The problem there is that the game, our podcast listeners are just love this level of detail, I'm sure, but but the game thinks you're strumming when you're not, once the mute's off, because the strings are vibrating a lot more than they were, and so it detects large numbers of false strums. With the keys, it has a MIDI out, but normally when you're playing it actually doesn't use that for the controller. It's got some custom thing. And unfortunately, it's a one or the other thing, because I tried actually playing the game while plugging the keyboard into a computer to see what I could hear, and it You couldn't do that. But it should be the case that you can plug it into the MIDI adapter and get a MIDI splitter and then hear things.
So or you could plug a MIDI keyboard in, I think, like into that MIDI receiver, right? Like
it is a MIDI keyboard, but normally when you play in game, you don't.
Right.
But you could use that same keyboard. So I just haven't bought a MIDI splitter to try that out. But I think if I were actually wanted to use it to learn to play keyboard as opposed to already knowing how to play keyboard, I would do that. Though I will say that the keyboard learning experience is much, my guess is it's much less satisfactory than learning guitar or probably learning drums as well.
Yeah, learning drums is, I mean, I learned drums because of Rock Band, and now I really play drums. Like, I went and it's funny, you know, I practiced a lot. Like, I remember it was Vaseline. That like that intro, and it's like it's got all these like all these like like upbeat sort of kick drum stuff, and I was like, I was pretty good at like a regular beat, but then it was the first time I was like, oh my god, and I totally shouted.
that's my demon, is the upbeat kick.
Yeah, and then I sat down.
And I need to practice that,
and it was fun because it's funny how when you practice you know how the drums are buttons, so you have, I have to like take the batteries out because the minute I start practicing, it starts doing all this crap in the game, and I'm trying to just practice. And like setting a metronome up, you know, and like doing it really slow and like working it out. And then sort of shortly afterwards, in a combo at school, the drummer didn't show up. And so I filled in for him and was like, whoa, I'm way better at drums already. So I started practicing actual drums. And like, you know, the thing with the drums, and I know we're getting kind of granular on pro mode, but the only thing the drums are missing is that left pedal. And it's funny how big of a deal that is, the hi-hat pedal. Yeah. So the pro drums have got, you know, basically a crash, a ride, and a hi-hat, you know, a couple, three toms, and a snare, and a kick drum. And so it's like almost the entire drum set. But actually, it's only 75% of the drum set. Yeah. Because without that foot, like the minute you're not like keeping your hi-hat going, and I mean, playing rock, like with the random, I mean, it just doesn't feel remotely actually like real drumming. So that was my biggest criticism of pro drumming. I was really excited to try it once I finally got the pro kit. And there are so many approximations in the parts where you're like playing a like closed hi-hat and then going to open hi-hat on what would be the ride cymbal. Mm-hmm. So you're moving to different cymbals where ordinarily you'd be doing the whole thing with your foot. So it didn't quite get there just because they didn't quite commit on the hardware, which I'm sure is, I mean, I can imagine that would be really expensive and difficult to code. And like, you know, people were happy. Like, it seems sort of like they committed to making it a game before they were going to really make that musical experience. Something I think is kind of interesting, though, is when I look at the mastery, and like we're talking about this like really sort of really specific like musician-oriented thing, but the real mastery, and I feel like one of the big stories of Guitar Hero, of like the era of Guitar Hero, if you want to say that it's kind of coming to a close, or it's at least that era is kind of over, that the biggest story is really these freak show kids, right? Like, these kids who you see on YouTube 100%ing the Devil Went Down to Georgia while doing a Rubik's Cube. Have you seen this kid? Like, getting, like, he gets, like, 80% on Expert on something, like, on Dragon Force while doing, he does two Rubik's Cubes. Like, he, like, does a Rubik's Cube and then hits a chord and grabs another Rubik's Cube, and he's actually doing that.
Well, they've clearly sold their soul to the devil.
What is the Devil Went Down to Georgia, right? And I feel like that kind of mastery is a different story. Like, it's like a different story than like being super awesome at music and then getting super good at Guitar Hero.
Yeah,
it's more this like video game thing where it's like you become a freak at one video game and it doesn't matter what it is, and that whole thing that, like, you know, if you're so good at this, why don't you learn a real instrument, you know, that whole stupid debate and all of that. Like, I feel like that was the most fascinating thing I saw of all of this, was like when these 12-year-olds who could 100%, you know, Dragon Force in Guitar Hero
in the same way that one of those 12-year-olds could get like a 90 hit combo on you versus like Capcom versus SNK or something like that. Like, the same, that is like, I've always been interested in this idea with the rhythm games of like, they say, especially Harmonix has this really utopian vision, like, you know, we're making music, we're not making games. But I don't have a huge music background. When I actually go to play one of those, I start looking at it like a fighting game, kind of. I'm like, okay, I'm into the part of the song where I need to go 2-3-2-2-3, you know, like, I know to do that.
Yeah. When I feel like a lot of times I go into the game where, I mean, I'm a total musician about it. Like, when we play, like, as a group, like, I'm always like, I want to be the drummer, and like, because I play real loud, and it's all about like getting the groove in, and I don't really care what my score is. But like Tom Bissell and I are Xbox friends. And he, like, his scores on drums are, like, so much better than mine. Because because he approaches it like a game, and you'll watch people who play it, and sorry, Tom, maybe you actually are, like, super awesome at drums, but I feel like maybe he's not, but he really knows how to get a high score in Rock Band drums, and, like, right. You watch people, and it's not about, like, playing drums, it's about getting a high score, and these guitar, you know, the guys who play on YouTube, a lot of times they have the sound off entirely, right. And they're just, like, totally, like, just, like, a machine mm-hmm. about it.
Vocals do the same thing, man, you know, like, you close your eyes and listen to somebody who's singing into a Rock Band game and like really watching the line try to match their pitch. They have the little up down mm-hmm. arrow mm-hmm. that's like trying to match the pitch, and it just sounds terrible. It sounds like I mean
right.
They're like, you know, just trying to hit that pitch and no matter what. And really the best way to do it is to forget about the score and just like rock the mic and forget about it. Like look at the words if you want them, but.
Well, and commit to whatever pitch you happen to be on. Right?
Well, yeah, man. One of the greatest, probably the greatest single Rock Band experience I ever had was playing with Dan at a party that we had, and we broke out the Rock Band, and we played, it was Rock Band 1, and we played that Boston song by, like, Foreplay a long time. Which is, like, honestly, like, one of the awesomest Rock Band songs of all time, whether or not it's one of the awesomest songs of all time. And, like, he sang it, and this guy can, like, really, really sing, and I was playing drums, and we were all, had been drinking, and it was, like, just, it was the most fun moment. It was like this shining right? moment. Yeah. And like, you know, my random roommate is like playing guitar and like someone else is playing bass. And then Dan and I are just like rocking the fuck out. And it was really awesome. But yeah, I don't think we scored very high.
So that you were the guy who left this comment on Brainy Gamer on Michael Abbott's site about that night, right? Because mm-hmm. I think yeah, that was that comment I still remember. And I think that was the first time like I'd ever heard of you. So
one of the first things I wrote about games.
So if Ben Abraham, Ben, if you're listening to this and you want to to trace, you know, through links between blogs and you know history of the gaming blogosphere, I actually think that one comment on Michael's site is by somebody who's now, you know, a Kotaku editor is an interesting part of the story.
Yeah, no, it was.
It's a good thing we brought up Rock Band that
yeah,
night.
Right. I know, gave me something. Yeah, I remember I wrote a blog post about it. And
we could
I
have just had some beers and just hung out.
That, that was cool, though. I think that was the first time I was like, I was sort of edging into writing about games and being like, I was like, well, I can write about music, so like, I'll write about this game and music. I sent it to Michael and I sent it to Mitch Kropata as well. I was like, Mitch, check this out, man, because he really likes Rock Band too. He's written some really great stuff about it.
I mean, we're in this era of games that, oh, you know, it's all about what the player wants to do, create your own story, you know, mm-hmm. it is your story to make. And then kind of around the same time that this was all happening, the same time people were talking about Far Cry 2 and all the open-ended stuff, people were also talking about the music stuff, and mm-hmm. I feel like the music games are the strictest games you could possibly play.
Well, and David, you wrote something I thought really awesome. You wrote that thing right about the Beatles Rock Band and how it's like a it's sort of a biography.
Yeah, but it's a non-fiction game.
Non-fiction, yeah.
That's right.
David and I went back and forth on this a while, actually. I wrote, like, 3 Beatles Rock Band posts, and then, like,
Yeah, right. So the theory here is that we're just looking at genres of literature and comparing them to video games, and then forget genres of literature. The basic distinction in written material is this fiction or is this nonfiction? And the Beatles game goes much further towards the nonfiction side than anything else does. So, for example, they just comparing it to the other Rock Band games, they don't arrange the songs by difficulty. They arrange the songs chronologically. Yeah. And there's all the sort of historical trappings in there.
They get rid of the freestyle drum
sections. Mm-hmm. They
only Ringo. Nobody but Ringo.
Yeah, they hew much more closely to the actual music. And
I thought it creeped close to a music history thing, but it mm-hmm. never it didn't jump in. Like it didn't really give you. And the sad thing about it is that it locked all the music history behind unlockables. Like you need to like start scoring really high and get 100% to like unlock actually pretty hard to find Beatles pictures and like old session tapes, like background noise before they started playing. Yeah. It's just a shame because the gamification of Beatles Rock Band hurt it because mm-hmm. all this cool Beatles stuff is kind of trapped behind a bunch of things that I really don't want to put myself through to get to.
Right.
Hmm.
Did you guys play Beatles Rock Band? Or
you had it. I've only played it.
Yeah, I had it. You know, and I don't think I ever really got. I didn't get that far into it. You know, something about maybe just getting through early Beatles history. And my dad's gonna freak out if he hears this. I actually do love the early Beatles stuff. I love it just as much as the later stuff. But something about it, just in the game, I was like, I wanted to play Sgt. Pepper's, and I just never quite got there. You know.
It's a good like artifact kind of, because when you to see how a certain band approaches instruments,
it does
like
feel
even
a
if,
little
like,
bit like an artifact.
Yeah,
I mean
yeah.
It's funny, you know, I'm not like, I feel like I'm such a bad musician whenever I admit this, but I'm not like a huge Beatles guy. Like I think they were really amazing songwriters, but I never like totally got into it like as a cultural thing. And you know that game, like I played a little with Dan, and like I played at parties. Like we'll go to a party one time we were at a party and they had a huge screen and all the instruments, and then they had Rock Band 2 and they had the Beatles, and then the Rock Band 2 disc was scratched, so we couldn't play it, and then we played the Beatles, and it really just was not, it's not a party game, like it's not really, unless you're like a, you know, a bunch of people who really like the Beatles.
Right.
But it has that kind of raucist, like, it feels a little like it, that whole like Beatles worship thing. I don't know,
right.
Like I think that...
Well, I mean, Danny Harrison was like one of the creative leads on it or something, so like...
When it came out, though, it felt like this might be a new thing.
Oh, everyone hyped it. I remember, man. Well, it was Scheisel, I think, in the New York Times.
Right.
It was this huge feature on, like, how it was the most, like, how much money they spent making it. And
right.
It was going to be this whole huge thing.
Well, and everyone envisioned, like, well, who's the next artist? And I think they did a Green Day?
They did a Green Day one.
Which was probably
fine. I'm sure it was fine. I've never even met anyone who's played the Green Day.
No, I remember Justin. I remember Justin McElroy wrote a really funny review of it at Joystick. I think he kind of liked it, though. I can't really remember.
I mean, we just never saw the sort of same album appreciation, and maybe just because there's not an artist that fits so well.
Yeah,
you know, Rock Band clearly lends itself well.
And the Beatles have a really diverse catalog, like you know, Bulldog versus Twist and Shout versus you know, Magical Mystery Tour. They just have a really wide variety of songs, so it's easier. I mean, Green Day, it's like how many different like power chords?
Guitar Hero tried to do it, right? I think they came out with was it Van Halen? Aerosmith.
There was Van Halen came out too. Actually, I know some people who worked on that. I think it was kind of not
ideal. Yeah, that one was heavily panned.
Which is funny because really, variety can sometimes I find in these games be a strike against. I feel like there's music that works really well in music games, but a lot of times, you know, the weirder it gets, the more psychedelic it gets, especially with like electronic drum parts, can become a real bummer.
Out of curiosity, have you looked into like the sort of DLC available now for Rock Band? Because it's quite diverse. Mm-hmm. You go anywhere from like Pantera to Lady Gaga.
There are definitely times where I remember, like, I think it was, I downloaded a lot of Muse, which you would think would be a band that would work really well with Rock Band, and I remember being pretty disappointed. And they're like, I really like that band. It was, like, early Muse, too, like, the really, really rockin' stuff, and just feeling a little bit like the drum parts didn't quite feel right. It didn't have the thing is that they've got. But really, it's in Rock Band 3, since there are so many keyboard songs, there's a lot of that kind of new wave stuff. And so the keyboard parts are interesting, but I've given Dan Bruno, who you guys know, I think, from Twitter, who works at Harmonix, I've given him a lot of crap about a lot of those drum parts, those just sort of weird, like, I'm trying to remember what it is. There's a song in 3/4, maybe you know what it is.
Trying to give him a bunch of crap about, like...
It's this drum part that's like, ta 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 ta, it just never hits a groove. And it's some song that's like, sort of, I guess that's in 4, but it's like some kind of groove that you would think would like work really well. Oh, it's... I'll remember what it is at some point, and then I'll just yell it in the middle of it. Someone else will be talking, and I'll just yell
just
it.
Burst out.
But there are a lot of these parts that really just feel broken up, like, and so they don't groove, like they just don't feel good to play. And so really, the more you get into those kind of weird parts, like weird Beatles tunes and stuff, a lot of times for me it doesn't work as well because you're just when you're just rocking out, like it just feels kind of right.
The one thing that Beatles aside that that game introduced, which is actually pretty special, is vocal harmonies.
Yeah, right.
And so I'll be honest, I'm a lousy singer, but some of the most, maybe the most powerful experiences I've actually ever had in a video game is when my wife and I are trying to do the vocal harmonies, and most of the time it sounds horrible, but then every once in a while we hit it and it just feels wonderful to have, you know, the two of us harmonizing together.
Well, and that thing, I mean, and that gets back to like that bringing it into the real world thing. I mean, I don't know, I sing a lot with Dan, and like there's something about singing with people, and now we perform with a third singer, Lindsay, who sings sort of, she's on top, so it's the three of us harmonizing a lot. And yeah, I mean, there's nothing like it. It's one of the best sounds in the world. And it's also like a weird, I'm sure you found this, like when you're singing with someone, how you sync up in this sort of like subconscious way. It's really amazing, like where you'll sing the wrong words together and stuff, like even though you just happen to, because you're like, you know, in that blink sort of instant moment, like you're really synced in. And yeah, the fact that they added harmony was awesome, like to the games. Yeah.
And like Dan said earlier with vocals, I mean, it's all about committing to what you're doing. Totally. And with the harmonies, you know, even more so. Here we are, syncing up.
Syncing up, right? Yeah. It's like we've been singing together for the last
You could do that in thirds, do that again.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to penalize you because you're off pitch. But
you're not going to get all the stars that you want. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. The Beatles thing, even with that harmony thing, you know, it was the specificity that was required to actually get those points is interesting, you know? Like,
well, those parts are hard. Like, those
Beatles songs,
totally. You know, oh, man.
Not easy harmonies. Like.
Yeah, and you know, they were picky about when they were doing harmony. I mean, the Beatles did it, I think, better than anyone. That thing, like, you know...
Oh, the Beach Boys, maybe.
You Beach Boys were
fantastic. Don't tell Brian Wilson that.
Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah.
Bone Thugs do have some pretty righteous harmonies going on.
But you know, I've played some Beatles songs with people before, you know, and like we'll be singing and somebody will just try to throw a harmony on a lyric that the Beatles didn't have a harmony on, and it doesn't sound quite as like it should, you know?
You kind of want to dock them points.
Yeah, I know.
That's going to cost you a star.
It's cool that you can see that, like, actually in the vocal line on there.
That's what always strikes me as so odd about the music games, that for... I mean, and right, you're a jazz person, right, Kirk? I mean, there's no improvisation at all in Rock Band.
Well, like, what's funny is, no, there isn't. And, like, to the point where it really rips on you if you do it. And a lot of musicians I know don't like those games as a result. And, like, it's funny, though. I don't like playing the drums as much anymore. It sounds like such an annoying thing to say, but it's like when I learned how to play real drums, I went back to the drums and I was like, right. What? Like, I can't mix up the snare drum. Like, I have to play this exact stupid pattern the entire song.
Yeah.
And if I do, like, it gets grumpy.
So does that mean it's a better pedagogical tool for people that know almost nothing about music and really need to hew closely?
You know what I was saying a second ago? Yeah. I think that after a certain point, you just... It's a frustrating thing to play, you know?
You know what it is, though, I think also, and this is something that Mitch Krapata wrote about that really resonated with me, is that more than anything, I think that as much as Guitar Hero or Rock Band can teach you about playing music, I think it teaches you how to listen to music.
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I mean...
Right, I never paid any attention to Paul McCartney's bass lines.
Same.
I've heard so many people, after playing Beatles Rock Band, like, Paul McCartney is a wonderful, wonderful bass player.
It's such a funny thing about bass, you know, because it's this melodic instrument, single note, counter melody instrument, and there are always those moments where you listen to the bass in whatever band you're into and realize, like, holy crap, guy was, like, doing an entirely other situation underneath the band, and you never noticed because you could only hear the singers.
Well, how much is this, though, because you either know a lot about music or you've committed to that sort of pro or higher-level play experience than, say, like, the average Rock Band player?
Well, I mean, I can't speak to it, obviously, because I do have that experience, but... listening to Mitch talk about it, I mean, he wrote a really great post. Maybe we can link to it in the show notes or something. But he wrote a really cool thing about how the game had really changed the way that he listened to music. Like, how he could hear the parts, and he just knew... And I think a lot of my friends, my roommates and stuff that I've talked to, they just know now, oh, like, that's the lead guitar, you know? Where they just didn't even know that. Like, they would just hear a song, and there's the song. But then they'd say, oh, yeah, that's the guitar solo. And even better, like, that's the guitar solo that I played that one time where we were about to bomb out, and I saved the band, you know? Which is another level, but I think it's pretty safe to say that it really helps you hear more.
Yeah. I think playing the drums also, he wrote about, like, getting over, like, the syncopation barrier, well, like you were saying, you know, doing the kick pedal on the offbeats.
Right.
It's there's certain things that you're not even aware are tricky.
Well, and even as a musician, I mean, like, I learned a lot. I guess I kind of learned a lot about how minimal a lot of drum parts are, especially on like Bon Jovi or whatever, like those tunes, the dude is playing like nothing, you know, he's playing like five notes per bar, just like boom, boom, god, you know, and it's like, that's it. But And so when you're playing, you really feel like you should be playing more, but you're like, no, I'm actually playing note for note with this. What's going on here? Like, there's nothing. It's just much simpler than
I thought. Makes you dislike Bon Jovi a bit more? Or?
Yeah, well, it makes me appreciate the simplicity of the brilliant simplicity of Bon Jovi's drummer. I should know this guy's name.
Well played.
You know, something I like about these games, honestly, like the non-Beatles games, I like the fiction.
Oh, for sure.
As a musician, like I really, especially in Rock Band 3, if you guys have you guys all played Rock Band?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So have you started a band in that?
Yes. We all played a band together once.
Oh, that's right.
What
am
I talking about?
We like all sat in my like living room, my last apartment, and played. Right. Because there are these cutscenes in the new one. I don't.
Oh yeah.
There weren't really cutscenes like in the early ones. There was that opening cinematic sort of, but
like countdown.
Yeah, but there wasn't really like you just got to know your band through seeing them perform. But you basically just flew around. But now in this, there are those cutscenes where you like choose your band name. Like,
it was a huge important deal.
Well, right, and it really captures like obviously a lot of the guys at Harmonix are musicians because just having done a lot of bands. You know, we did this band forever, and like we've done so much of this stuff, and like doing that again and seeing this. Really hilariously charming, warm, sort of really optimistic, awesome version of it. Like, you know, there's no bullshit. There's nobody not showing up to rehearsals. There's no, like, one guy in the band who isn't as committed as everyone else.
No one's sleeping with each other.
Right. Yeah. There's no, like, girlfriend drama or, like...
vicious digital drug addiction story.
It's just all awesome. You know, it's not just that ridiculousness of, like, you played your good first gig and got 79,000 fans. It's like, which is awesome. I mean, because, you know, you're playing, you're like, yes! Like, I would love to get 5 new fans from,
by
like,
playing Living on a Prayer.
Exactly. Just like the original.
So that... Again, I've gone to several Harmonix talks at GDC, but I think the first one that I went to, I guess this is 3 GDCs ago, they were talking about their philosophy towards building a coherent game out of a studio that's a collection of individuals and getting people on the same page. And so the key that they have is that every game has to be around one big idea. And I don't remember exactly what it was for Guitar Hero. It's just like what it feels like to rock out or something like that. But for Rock Band, their big idea was the experience of being in a band, and so that's not just that there's multiple instruments playing, but it's all this stuff that you're talking about.
I remember
about.
They even hired, like, what's her name from Slater Kinney wrote this column for Slate. It was great. It was right when Rock Band came out. And I think they got her to be like a advisor, like people who had been in like touring bands, you know, like Slater Kinney like tours insane amount. And like, you know, they've been doing it forever. And so it was like to try to just, you know, and she was kind of making fun of the game, being like, well, okay, this, here are all the things that aren't there, you know, like schlepping your gear and like, you know, sleeping in the van and whatever.
Down.
Yeah. But, and she was just a funny writer too. But it was cool because, I think that they like really paid a lot of attention to that. And there are a lot of really, really great details. Like, I really like that, this like utopian band world where like you can still, because you know that's the thing too, is that you can't do that anymore. I mean, you can't be a band. I mean, I feel really jaded saying this, but like, and of course you can. I mean, there are people who do it, but it's so difficult to do that dream. Like, that's such a like 90s dream or whatever. Like, the like, we'll make a band and then, you know, we'll play a good gig and we'll get a van and then we'll tour and work really hard. And, you know, and then it's like, now it's like, you know,
it's
we'll
like
get a band
dream.
And we'll get like one song maybe on an MTV show and then like we'll get residuals for a while and then we'll release an EP on it. Like, it's such a weird different scene now than that. It feels so quaint and like comforting, and I love it. Like, I think it's like one of my favorite things.
I mean, it even feels like YouTube is playing a bigger role in sort of band composition
and
instant,
like,
fame than
everything.
Touring.
Like, we're in this, you know, it's just they're chilling on their plane or whatever in the game, like sort of doing music videos and stuff, like it's 1996 still. And like, and I really like that.
So how inseparable then do you think the fiction of Rock Band is from the play experience in terms of, I mean, maybe what can either salvage or kind of grow the music genre?
It's funny, I feel like there are games that they could make about, you know, a behind the music style game. I think it was a fake trailer for this like 16-bit story of some indie band, and it was like all stylized and they'd done it up so it had all these fantasy elements and stuff, but it was still like a music thing. Like, I think that those stories can be really good stories.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I guess I don't really know.
It seems like such a single player, or maybe even like, you know, you have your friend who comes over a lot and you guys play together,
like,
and you
just
go
say
through,
like, your friend
quest.
Named Dan.
Yeah, like maybe your name is Kirk and your buddy Dan. You know, it's like, I think the thing that really made the music genre take off like it did was the party happy element.
Absolutely.
Of it. And that sort of questing thing doesn't really translate to that, you know? It's like when you're with people and, you know, you load up Rock Band, you know, you go to the quick play, you go to the whatever, the you pick a track, you play it. So, you know, it's hard to say, it's hard for me to say that, like, that questing thing is integral to the progress of the genre. Like, I think...
That's true. I think you're right. Like, that it's interesting. Like, that the quest progression story part really appeals to me as a gamer. Like, it's, I like the story and I like the progression. But, I mean, what made Rock Band the breakout success that it was that pick up and play like party thing, which you can't even go on tour in.
There is a unique experience of being with the same people.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
So I had a rock band in the first Rock Band, mm-hmm. and then we transferred over to the second Rock Band, mm-hmm. and then friends like, you know, went their separate ways, and then got together a couple times to play Rock Band 3 together, and it was
tour.
Like, yeah, it felt like the reunion tour, getting the band back together,
right.
and it had such a different feel when you're playing that fictional, even if it's just a fiction you share together,
right.
than it is picking four random friends.
Yeah, I don't even like, I'm, honestly, yeah, I way prefer the one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, that's interesting.
And the past of Rock Band is maybe as a party game, but then there's this whole sort of didactic, educational component to it. And I think playing up the fiction there really helps, because it helps preserve the illusion that you're making constant progress in your learning, mm-hmm. and it just makes it more fun to practice if you're, you know, progressing with your band, getting more stuff, than if you're sitting in front of the piano for hours and hours and
well, no, it's funny. I mean, and that really, well, it's part of that is right. This talking about like how games teach and like what, you know, how we can get, like, I got super good at Bayonetta because like that game made me want
to
play it,
and
so,
you
like,
know how to fling your hair around.
Exactly. Like, I know all the combos from that game because of that. Like, any game, you know, teaches really well, and it's what all the gamification people are like super, you know, hot about. But there's also, it also kind of says an interesting thing about teaching, you know. I teach music, and the power of ensemble teaching is very much that, what you just articulated, like that you can learn on your own, you know, anyone could learn how to play guitar, just get a guitar, and there are all kinds of videos on YouTube. But the minute you have a band, like, then you've got people counting on you, and mm-hmm. you need to do well. And, you know, for high school kids, like, the minute we give them a jazz band to come play in, and, like, we're playing all this stuff, and, like, they're with their friends, and we have a show coming up, and we have to, like, team. I mean, it was the most rewarding thing ever for me and for them. I think, like, you know, I remember when I was in a high school band, it was the same thing, like, this kind of, you wanted to learn because you were progressing towards something. And I think that a lot of those design tricks they used in the game, like, you know, tying, like, if someone fails out, you can save them. Like, some of these really great, great things really, like, I think helped reinforce that and made the game really cool.
Yeah. When I started playing guitar, you know, it was about, like, guitar magazines and, like, searching for tabs online or whatever, and like learning songs essentially, like, almost like if you were learning a language phonetically. It was, I didn't know anything about music, I was just playing these songs, and you know, to hear myself playing them was a really cool experience. And I have to wonder what it would be like, maybe you can speak to this, David, but playing, like, learning a song in Rock Band and learning it really well and then turning off the game and playing it. I wonder what
that's
like.
Yeah, I wonder what that's going to be like, too, because I've gotten to this stage, like, now I'm going through the songs at the hard difficulty level on the Pro Guitar, and there's enough music there. Like, most of the time I'm playing full chords, for example, instead of two-note chords. So there's enough music there that you can hear the song if you just plug it into the mic and do that. But there's enough distance, or maybe it's just me getting caught up in the gamification, that I just want to kind of make it through the in-game progress. And so I'm tentatively planning that once I get up to expert, which if I get up to, I think I'll make it there at least on the easier songs, that I really will try to learn some of the songs more seriously. But I'm not there yet, certainly. One of the big difference, and I noticed this coming at for the Pro Keys, and it's also there in Pro Guitar, for the real instruments compared to the fake instruments, is that what your hands are doing it's much more complex, but it makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. So when I'm playing pro keys, I realized fairly early on that I had a huge leg up over somebody who hadn't played piano before, because my hand just naturally falls into certain chord shapes, and it even goes between chord progressions. You know, this is not good radio, but it goes between chord progressions. And so I think they're learning things, learning the pro songs is going to be easier than what looks like the simpler task of learning the fake guitar songs.
I think that's totally true.
And so actually one of the things that I found frustrating about the Beatles is, like, you know, I love the Beatles. These are songs that I know really well. And so not only did I get like 3 microphones for the game, but I actually got a couple of microphone stands, because I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to be playing guitar and right. singing along the game. And it was really freaking hard. And because, I mean, part of that was maybe I was biting off a little bit more than I can chew. So just because I can do, you know, the songs on expert guitar level, doesn't, doing that plus throwing in vocals is hard. But I also realized that my brain had to devote so much kind of processing power to figure out what was going on screen and translating that into what you know, colored buttons I should press, that there wasn't enough processing power left over to sing at all well. Whereas if my brain could translate that into, oh, you know, it was a G chord and a C chord and a D chord, then maybe I would have processing power left over to sing to sing well.
That's definitely true. I think there's a, I mean, man, when I learned, I started playing guitar and singing when I moved out here, so like 8 years ago, 7 years ago. And it was really hard for me. That's just hard. Like, it's hard from being a saxophonist, where it's like one note and you're just blowing on this thing, and it's like you just focus on your note, where suddenly you're like, I'm like learning guitar and singing and trying to do different parts. So that's, but it's funny how it's doable once you've learned the instrument, but there's this extra layer, right, between the actual music, like the instrument that's playing it, and the plastic instrument,
right.
Like the 4-button or whatever 5-button thing. And so you're dealing with this like weird approximation, and that totally happens all the time. Like on the drums, where I'll be playing a kick, especially like when I'm not, because I don't play on expert drums that much, because sometimes it just gets brutal and I fail out. But where the kick will be doing, you know, doubling up in places, and it just doesn't, and I get dinged for it, which has always struck me as like a design shortcoming. I feel like, I mean, a lot of this stuff, like having the real notes play, would be probably really, really hard to implement. But I feel like they could have done a way where if you play the note to the 1-for-1 like note on drums, and it wasn't in your part because you're playing on medium or something, like they just shouldn't penalize you for it. That always pissed me off, because I'd be like playing the actual part and would get dinged for it. So that extra layer of like, okay, now I know the part. Now what am I taking out? Like, what am I editing?
Yeah, you know the part. You need to also know the game,
right?
And then you need to know
and
whatever
read
skills,
their
yeah.
weird, you know, mm-hmm. nomenclature as it comes at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, a friend of mine, another musician friend of mine, commented when he played the game that playing Rock Band on the fake plastic instruments, I mean, it's very unrepresentative, but it does actually kind of feel like sight reading. I mean, it feels like sight reading a really simple instrument, but it still really does feel like sight reading.
It definitely is. It's funny, I would play, when I was playing a lot of Rock Band, I'd be teaching, I was teaching a lot of clarinet lessons, and I'm not like that good at clarinet, and it was a lot of classical stuff, so it was a lot of reading. And I totally would play the game, and this is, I mean, I am 100% confident of this. I'd be playing the game in the morning or something, and I'd play for an hour, and, you know, it's funny because, you know, so you read these piano rolls as they come towards you, which is, you know, so you're reading bottom to top, which is entirely different than music where you read left to right, but it's the exact same, and, you know, everyone who's played Rock Band knows this, like, when you hit success, it's because you're reading ahead. Like, so you've gotten in that, you know your instrument well enough that you can see the part and you can read ahead. And that's the exact same when you're sight reading. So I would be doing a lot of that, and then I'd be sight reading these classical pieces on clarinet and like killing it. And I'd just be like, oh my god, like this is awesome. Rock Band is totally making me better at, like, I'm way less rusty because I've just been using that exact same mechanism. So it totally is.
Anyways, the reason why I brought that up is I think that might also be going on with the trying to play guitar and vocals at the same time, is that on the one hand, playing the plastic guitar is like sight reading, but on the other hand, if you're really sight reading, it's almost impossible to do something other than one part that you're that you're sight reading. And so since it doesn't move beyond that to actual you know, musicality.
It's always an approximation.
You're just always using the wrong parts of your brain for fluently doing multiple things.
Mm-hmm. I've always been impressed with how harmonics does that, like with the note tracking process. One of our friends was a note tracker for a while for Activision, and just that whole process of like taking a piece of music, and you see this sometimes with like student band parts where it's like Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, but it's written for like a middle school band, so it's not actually Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, and like they've simplified it where it's like the gist, you know, it's like the Cliff's Notes version.
Yeah.
And so they can learn Shostakovich and they can play, and it's not going to be some, because there's a lot of that music's pretty lame, that like in the jungle, you know, and they're going dun dun dun. Mm-hmm. And so they're playing something that's like ostensibly good, but it's been simplified. And like the guys who do that like get a lot of respect from me. Like I think that's a really weird, cool gig. And I think like the enharmonics, they do the same thing, or you know, wherever at note tracking, like you have to take an Eddie Van Halen guitar solo and then pick two notes per bar, you know, and you have to like approximate this, like,
what are the representative parts
of, you know, green, blue, orange.
And still feel badass. As
well, exactly. Like, it has to still get the thing, which, yeah.
What's funny, though, is that's what you do. Like, as you become a good musician, and Eddie Van Halen's not a good example, because Eddie Van Halen, you're
right, though.
If you're going to play Van Halen music, like, you should learn the part. But, you know, if you're playing, like, I don't know, you're playing, What's that Dylan tune that's in Rock Band 2? Tangled Up in Blue. Mm. You know, if you're going to play that part, you're not going to play exactly what he plays. You know, you're going to approximate the part, you're going to learn the chords, and you're going to, like, bring them out in your own interpretation of the rhythm. And it'll probably follow a similar groove, or maybe it won't, you know? Yeah. And that's part of learning an instrument and becoming good.
You know, that's actually really interesting, too, because this is... I don't know whether I'm going to be able to articulate this right now. This is a thought I'm having. But it's kind of like, okay, so... when you're learning something real fast on an instrument, like when I'm learning some like classical piece on saxophone, and it's, you know, something really fast, you don't think of the piece of music as all those notes, right? Like whenever you check out some guy like Michael Brecker, like Bob Berg, one of these like really freakish saxophone players who can play incredibly fast, they never are thinking like they're not thinking that fast. They think really slowly. So it's almost like in Rock Band like traces that in reverse. Like it's like these games take it from when you're at your most complicated, it looks like a mess, like on the screen, right? It's a billion notes and you're playing on expert and it's note to note. But then actually, like when you get down to beginner, you're sort of feeling like you're an incredibly like practiced musician and you're playing this incredibly difficult thing, and that's actually how a really practiced musician would feel it. So it's like even more of a simulation. That's kind of an interesting thought.
It's weird because I always find it, you know, I'm not that great at any of the Rock Band games, but I almost find it harder to knock it down to the easiest difficulty level, because I'm so trained in a video game sense to always be pressing some kind of button. But you can't.
It's the notes you don't
exactly
play.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh man, this is deep. I'm not playing this note and something's happening. Yeah. It makes it harder to do it.
So also one thing about the note tracking, that the pro guitar adds an extra sort of interesting twist to that. And I heard them talk about this on a harmonics podcast. So you think, oh, they're really trying to actually represent the actual notes there. But then you have the problem that a lot of these pieces were done in multiple takes, you know, multiple tracks in a recording studio.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, some of this is really egregious. Like, Bohemian Rhapsody is not being played by, you know, a single track. And so they say, you know, what do you want to do here? And they really have to make their choices. And so what they were saying is they always wanted to, you know, be as true to the music as possible. But ultimately what they're doing is, like, if you were a cover band playing these songs, what would you actually do? Or what they would do is, they would frequently go to videos of concert performances by the bands playing the songs, because then, I mean, maybe there's still, you know, pre-recorded tracks going on in the background, but ultimately somebody is there on stage picking one, you know, one guitar line to be playing, even if there's a couple
very
other
much
ones
that,
recorded.
That challenge of like taking your studio album onto the stage, like that kind of de-orchestration challenge a lot of times, like,
yeah,
was easier, you know, with like the Ramones or whatever, like really basic guitar rock. But yeah, the minute you've got these really produced records, you need to figure out, okay, what's the heart of the thing. And it's funny, yeah, they had to do the same thing
Little known fact about Bohemian Rhapsody, actually, Freddie Mercury played all those parts at the same time in the same session.
Well, you know,
and sang four-part harmony. And
he was playing with his feet. He was playing this guitar solo.
Yeah, well, he was one of those kids with a Rubik's Cube. And
he had three mouths. Sing three parts at the same time. Those faces in the video are actually all
five-star faces.
So before we start wrapping up, I do want to get to the point because it feels like we are...
the preamble of the real podcast.
It feels like we're sort of waxing poetic about how much Rock Band does all these amazing things. And there's some... We're getting kind of nitpicky here on some of the problems, especially with the sort of pro instruments. But they're clearly struggling. I mean, Guitar Hero collapsed. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, and Harmonix has not been completely open about how much money they're making off of the DLC content. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how much the licensing issues cost them alone. But surely the small number of people who bought Rock Band 3 or a portion of that small group is also going to be the portion to buy Lady Gaga, you know, and sort of, I don't know how sustainable that is. And I'm curious to know what you guys think is something that could maybe revive the genre or whether or not you think it's sort of on its last legs inherently or why you think that might be.
You could also think about Dance Central, which we haven't talked about at all yet, which is Harmonix's new thing.
Right.
Like, all they want to talk about is Dance Central.
Or DJ Hero, which was canceled. The first one came out, but they canceled the second one that was supposed to have come out.
It's funny. Kirk and I were just talking a little while ago about print and digital media, you know? And I think the thing that you had said, Kirk, at one point was like, well, you know, I'll always love print. And I agree. Like, print will always have a place in our hearts, you know.
Yeah, no.
Will it always have a place in the market? Right, yeah. Right. And you know, it's so weird because Rock Band is such a great way to listen to music. It's when I dial it up now, that's what I want to do with it. I want to put on headphones and like really listen to my part and listen deep. And I hope that it's around. You know, I hope that it revives. And I don't know what can do it, but I hope that it sticks around.
I should say, you know, we've talked a lot about Pro today, and Alex Rogopoulos, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, but the CEO of Harmonix, said that early in February, when they knew they were laying people off, that the team wanted to focus on Pro functionality. Mm-hmm. And it seems like such a niche aspect of the game to focus on. And maybe that's where sort of the music genre is permanently headed, a sort of niche community.
Well, you know, it's the challenge with these games, right, is that it's really hard to quantify, like, the zeitgeist. But those games were very much the zeitgeist for a minute, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. In 2008.
A good long while, I would
say.
Yeah, I think
years.
More than just,
yeah. I mean, you know, a couple of years. And they're not now. They're not cool. Like, they aren't cool anymore. I don't know. You know, it was like, they have the whiff of the fad about them. Like, for whatever reason, they've just been tainted with that.
It's so strange, though, because I feel like Rock Band knew that the peripherals might be something that would bust, and going with the pro guitar was saying, we're bringing back legitimacy.
Well, you know, that is a little bit, like, I mean, I'm kind of just looking at it. I don't really know, but that is a little too late, maybe. Yeah. Like, there's the fact that I think they made some pretty big hardware mistakes, like, only in that they... I don't know if mistakes is the right word, but the progression of the hardware like didn't quite work because you had this kind of broken drum set that really was a drag. The Rock Band 1 drum set sucks, and then the 2 was better, and then they had Pro Mode. So you had to kind of keep upgrading, and I think they pushed it too far. Like, people would have maybe upgraded once, like, but if you could have... It's kind of what's so great about Dance Central is you don't have to upgrade your limbs, you know? Like, you've got a body, and, like...
I wish I could when I play Dance Central.
The game will help you upgrade your...
I need to upgrade my mojo. Can I do that?
The game will do that for you.
Real quick to interrupt again. Sure. I'm sorry, but I'm glad you're mentioning the hardware because I was just reading that Harmonix announced that Mad Catz is going to be re-releasing Rock Band 3 with their peripherals.
Right.
Sort of, like, abandoning...
Well, and their peripherals are great. I mean, and that's smart. It's just, again, it does feel a little too late. I mean, it's everybody has got... I see you guys have a drum set sitting over there.
Yeah.
Everyone's
it's
got
first generation,
that, you know?
Too, so
and
it's one of the junky
clanky
ones.
Piece
yeah.
of crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know, and, like, man, I've gotten rid of so many guitars, and now I've got, like, all of the stuff, and it's really good. Like, all the hardware is great. Yeah. You know, it's like the guitars feel really good, the newest ones, like the Mad Catz, the buttoned guitar is sweet, the drums really are responsive, but it's like, how many, you know, like, I got them all because I'm, like, a games journalist, and, like, you know, how many people really went out and, like, got all that stuff again, like, on top of the one or two drum sets they have, the, like, two or three plugged in guitars. So it was like, that was definitely part of it. It's like, there was this fatigue, like everyone, it just seemed like that was the broader sense.
When you were talking about 2006, 2007, when this was first, I remember people bringing over their PS2s to other people's houses to play Guitar Hero, and all you had was the guitar. So it wasn't like you actually had to devote a whole corner of your living room to stuff.
The drums did kick it up a notch.
Like, and now you're getting back, we were talking about Dance Central, and what's the one on the Wii that everyone loves? Dance. Just Dance. That's insanely popular, and they make them all the time.
And singing games as well.
And they sell like crazy. Like,
and all you need is the Wiimote. And I think that might be, we got to a certain point with the rhythm / music games where we push it as far as we could possibly go with the peripherals, and now we're contracting to the point where Dance Central, you don't even need anything other than your Kinect.
So I'm going to step back from this and talk about fads and technology, and also fads and startup in general. Is there's a few patterns that technologies and things like this can go through. By far the most common is just failure from start to finish, of course. But then there's a few companies or platforms, whatever, that have some glorious success, and then they fade out. But then there's a much rarer mode where you have companies that either don't get it right the first time, but manage to survive as a startup for, you know, 3 or 4 years, maybe waiting out an economic bust and then catching the next one. Or they have their success, then they have their failure, but they manage to survive until they grow again. The week that we're recording this is a particularly fascinating week for that, when Google freaked out by buying Motorola.
Yeah.
HP freaked out and is ditched the touchpad and ditched their entire computing PC business, which actually is a move that IBM did, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. They ditched their PC business to Lenovo, and that seemed kind of weird at the time, but now they're doing awesome. But anyways, the reason why Google and HP are freaking out is because of Apple, of course, which, you know, you look at Apple in the late 1990s, and anybody who would predict that they'd be successful, that they'd still be around, let alone having the largest market capitalization of any company in the world right now, would have to be crazy. So I'm not saying that Harmonix is going to pull an Apple on us by any means, but this is a company that is run, that has really smart people, that is full of people who are devoted both to video games, both to music. They have gone through a rough patch recently, but they didn't approach it in the same way that Activision / Guitar Hero did. I mean, that one, I think, is just, if it revives, it'll be because somebody else has figured out the next fad and they're pulling up on
it. There's a reason we didn't mention Guitar Hero very much at all.
Exactly. And also, Harmonix has taken themselves private again, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, sometimes going private can mean that there's an investment firm who's figuring out how to milk them and flip them to somebody else and sell the company for barts. But I'm hoping that the original Harmonix folks have enough control there that so it seems to me that they're setting themselves up to at least give themselves a chance to ride out the tough times. And Dance Central is a genuine, you know, success on the Kinect. It's the only Kinect game that I ever hear people talk about, and the Kinect is selling pretty well. And I think there's enough people there who care about music in ways that they can express better with Rock Band kinds of things. So I don't know what it's going to be like 5 years from now, but if there's anybody who can, and I don't think it's going to be doing things the same way as Rock Band was doing it 2 years ago when they were really popular, or even now in pro mode. But if there's anybody who can bring something out of their current failure, it's those guys.
Yeah, I think it. I think that's definitely true. I think that there's a lot of heart at that studio. Everybody I know who works there. So a guy, saxophone player that I went to, is a really talented, like burning player. Works there. Like everybody there is really serious.
Yeah, like less a lot of heart people on there. Twitter were saying. I think it was this Friday. There were 7 different harmonics bands playing in Boston area the same evening.
Well, there was, who was it? If you've seen it, and like they're new now that they're, you know, independent. Their new ads, if you've seen any of their new ads, are hysterical. Yeah. I mean, they've really got like this indie mojo going, and like that. You should check out some of their ads. They're just on YouTube. They like it's like them just pantsing around the office, like writing. They did a Valentine's Day thing. That was like their nice. Valentine's Day pack, and it was all these like romantic songs.
Yeah.
It was a riot, and it just they're definitely like, I agree that if anyone's gonna, and I mean music and games, you know, I don't know. This is like my freaking like thesis statement for like what I write about is like that games and music are very, very similar, and that games are almost like kind of a type of music. Like they're so rhythmic, they're so that thing, and like there's a synthesis between those two things, and those guys are doing it more explicitly than anybody else. And like I really think like if anyone's gonna do whatever's next, I mean Dance Central's already cool, so I think it'll be those guys.
I hope you're right. Definitely.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, I was talking to Scott before everyone came over about sort of, and I'm glad we talked about the fiction of it all, because we were talking about Prapa the Rapa. And sort of, it's at this point, I think it's very much a sort of a cult favorite amongst a lot of gamers, and certainly amongst the blogosphere.
Yeah.
And maybe there is room to grow in the sort of narrative storytelling aspect of music games.
Or, you know, they announced that they're working on their first in-house iOS application. So what are these people, can they do when they've got an application that has access to your entire freaking music library?
Exactly.
I mean,
and when you start to see those really cool iPad games, like that game Pulse is like a really neat game.
And I mean, and the iPad in a couple of years from now, it's going to have processing power to rival anything on the console, so it can do, you know, real-time Fourier analysis to figure out like what the notes are that's actually going on. There's actually some application for the iPad that you play it a song and it'll spit out like guitar tablature for that.
Yeah,
and so I'm not saying that that's the kind of thing that they're gonna do, but you know, you look at some crazy mix-up of Rock Band and Garage Band and Pro Modes, and who knows what can happen.
Just to be a little bit less optimistic,
bring everyone.
Well, I just want to say that like I have a history of being optimistic about what Harmonix could do, and when they announced their I don't know what they call it, but the sort of user created songs, like bands can make their own.
Rock Band Network.
At that point, I was like, "This is it. This is the heaven. End of days have come for the amazingness that is music games." Because now, any song on my iTunes will be easily converted to a Rock Band song, and that hasn't happened.
Well, that wasn't what it was.
Of course, that's not what that was. But
I mean, that's the trick. They wanted to do it right, so like they wanted to.
Right.
You had to download a whole software package,
right.
in
and
order
you still
to do it. Like, you know.
The result is now you have to do it slowly.
Right.
And there's not, at least what I looked earlier today, there didn't look to be a lot of bands or songs that were either marketing their content well, or people that are already well known putting their content out there in the Rock Band platform.
Yeah.
Well, let's go around one more time, and everyone, you know, sit, pimp wherever you are at on the internet, websites, Twitter, whatever, and maybe one thing you want to see going forward, music game wise. We'll start. Who wants to start? Dan.
David Carlton at MalvasiaBianca.org,
and honestly right now I don't want to see anything more music game wise, because I'm gonna be so busy with Pro Guitar Mode that I think for about a year and a half there's still at least another year of content than that for me, so I'm happy for them to take this fall off, because I'm perfectly fine.
I'm Kirk Hamilton. I'm at Kotaku, but I'm also at kirkhamilton.com. And I think I'd like to see a Saxophone Hero game.
Big old plastic saxophone.
Because then I would get that saxophone and I would make YouTube videos of myself playing it and doing a Rubik's Cube, and I'd get super famous on YouTube.
Nice. My name's Dan Epchinski. I am at GamerMelodico.com. And also education editor at Acoustic Guitar Magazine, which is a great magazine you should all read.
Yeah, it is.
If you're into acoustic guitar.
You're just talking about print versus digital. Yeah. Like, we just keep
going.
We have
a website too.
Yeah, we're on both. So, and I would like to see Kirk Hamilton's album, The Exited Door, on Rock Band. Oh,
nice. How much did you pay him to say that?
Featuring Dan Epchinsky on some vocals.
That's true.
All right. As you know, I'm Scott. George and I suffered through this really quick demo called Fret Nice today.
Yep.
I want to see some kind of non-music game. It's a platformer that didn't work all that great, but I think it has potential. I really want to combine my Mario skills with my terrible button.
I just want to see Dance Central and Rock Band combine. What are those people who strap instruments to all parts of their body?
Oh,
I want that.
I want a one-man band
where I can just hit my knees and make music.
You need the Kinect. Maybe Nintendo will put the vitality sensor on your fingers while you're doing it. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. As always, you can write in experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
Experiencepoints.net is the website, and thanks for listening. And thanks everyone for coming.
This was great. Appreciate you guys coming in.
Thanks for having us.
We'll
have to do it again sometime. Until next time, take it easy.
Bye.